When my son Nicholas was visiting me a couple weeks ago, he pulled from my bookshelves an old children's book that he loved when he was younger. "This is one of my favorites," he said. "I forgot we owned it." He proceeded to spend the next several minutes flipping through it. The book was called The Voyage of the Basset. The illustrations by James C. Christensen are beautiful. In the story, set in the late 19th century, a professor of mythology laments the loss in the public's imagination of the memory or even knowledge of mythology. The character, Professor Algernon Aisling, insists that mythology is important no matter what one studies. He says that one's imagination is where science starts, because you have to have an idea first, and that the old myths are one way of keeping your imagination working. Our Time for All Ages story this morning was the retelling of an ancient myth, the story of Demeter and Persephone, the story around which ancient rites were said to be performed a very long time ago. In our scientific age, astronomically, we know that in the Northern Hemisphere, the moment in time when the sun stands directly above the equator while crossing from north to south is marked as the autumnal equinox. For some, this is all that is necessary to know about the equinox. Not everyone necessarily feels the need to create stories around the event or recreate ancient rites. But some people feel the need to mark these events, both because they have scientific relevance and relevance to our intuitive imaginations. Seasons evoke in some of us awareness of changes that are physiological, psychological, and spiritual. The expected events, the catalysts that we see in the change, are those events which we experience with our senses: the air getting cooler, the leaves changing, the changing sounds around us, like the birds ceasing to sing or others noisily migrating. But then, like Persephone, the unexpected happens. Hades explodes from the underworld, a little more dramatic than most of us will experience. And then everything shifts. I went to the climate strike on Friday in D.C. with a few people from the congregation. Thank you, Colleen, Sharon, Denise. What I noticed about the event was both its timing and several of the other events that were going on during the weekend, ending on Monday, the equinox. I know this was probably not astronomically determined, but I found it interesting. What I also found interesting was the ritual-like expression of the marches that marked the climate strike. There was chanting and singing and even sermon-like speeches that punctuated the event. The event was not simply a recitation of white papers that spoke to us of the scientific findings that let us know that climate change is real. It was a visceral experience of music and visual art and performance. Like mythological rituals of the past, it evoked both emotional and intellectual response. One of my friends wrote his entire MDiv thesis on the ritual-like expression of protest, especially the chanting. And it was not just in D.C. On my Facebook page, ministers from all over the country posted pictures of climate strikes they attended. And still more images arrived, hundreds and thousands of people all over the globe. The energy raised by all these people to raise awareness of climate change is powerful. It is an expression that transcends merely the facts of climate change. Don't get me wrong, the facts are crucial. But to understand at more than an intellectual level, Like the changing of the seasons, we can experience the awareness in all of our senses. Stories are important. Myths are important. Karen Armstrong writes in her book, A Short History of Myth, like science and technology, mythology is not about opting out of the world, but about enabling us to live more intensely within it. There are good stories, and there are bad stories. All of them affect how we see and experience the world. Stories and myths give meaning to our world. And though not all stories are literally true, they give truth to people's experience of the world. Karen Armstrong continues, "It is therefore a mistake to regard myth as an inferior mode of thought, which can be cast aside when human beings have attained an age of reason. Mythology is not an attempt at history and does not claim its tales are objective fact. Like novel and opera and ballet, myth is make-believe. It is a game that transfigures our fragmented, tragic world and helps us glimpse possibilities by asking, what if?" This question has provoked some of our most important discoveries in philosophy, science, and technology, but has also initiated some of the most amazing atrocities in history. In myth, the unexpected moves us forward. The appearance of Hades changes the lives of both Demeter and Persephone forever. And in changing their individual lives, the lives of all those who rely on the fecundity of the earth is influenced. Because of her grief, Demeter ceases to allow new growth, and the earth begins to die. At the climate strike, a woman came up to us and handed us each a blue bandana. She was from the organization 350.org. Bill McKibben started the organization in 2009 to raise the awareness of the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. 350 parts per million was the amount over which we would be headed toward climate disaster. We are currently at 415 parts per million globally. I heard Bill McKibben talk almost 15 years ago now. He talked of the devastation of the Earth if we did not take climate change seriously. This was before Superstorm Sandy. This was before Katrina. This was before Puerto Rico and Houston, before Dorian, before Paradise, California burned to the ground. He predicted the devastation. He told us what climate change might look like. But at the end of his talk, he ended with the unexpected. He said, or, climate change could be the impetus for a more kind and just society. I often see myself living in three different levels of awareness. The first is the awareness of everyday survival. I have meetings to go to. I have an order of service to finish. I have to finish my sermon by Sunday. My son's next graduation from Federal Academy is soon. My son Joe's birthday is in a couple weeks. I have to think about when and how we are going to celebrate it. On the next level, I notice that xenophobia and fear and distrust of the others is rising, as is overt racism. And at the highest, most existential level, the fear of a planet no longer habitable by human beings sits in the back of my consciousness. All of these levels of awareness play off each other and affect each other every single day of my life. Our inner landscape often resembles our outer reality. We create stories that reflect our fear, and we create stories that reflect the fact that we still have hope. The Demeter and Persephone story is about both. The earth does shift and change. During parts of the year, there is light and warmth, fecundity and abundance. In other parts, there is coldness and bleakness. There is death and darkness. The story is about the fear of loss and the hope that despite that loss, new life is possible. That descent into darkness, into the unconscious, into the deepest recesses of our being is absolutely necessary. Myth and story touch those parts of ourselves. Because, writes Karen Armstrong, we need myths to help us create a spiritual attitude, to see beyond the immediate requirements and enable us to experience that transcendent value that challenges our selfishness. We need myths that help us venerate the earth as sacred once again, instead of viewing it as a resource. This is crucial, because unless there is some kind of spiritual revolution that is able to keep us abreast of our technological genius, we will not save the planet. Many climate scientists believe that we have reached the point of no return, that we have gone too far, that we can no longer mitigate the damage. That may be so, but we can try and change the stories that lead us into despair. David Suzuki writes that the way we see the world shapes the way we treat it. If a mountain is a deity, not a pike of ore, if a river is one of the veins of the land, not potential irrigation water, if a forest is a sacred grove and not just timber, if other species are biological kin, not resources, or if the planet is our mother, not an opportunity, then we will treat each other with greater respect. This is a challenge to look at the world from the unexpected, from the different perspective. People in other times and places have not had as much trouble imagining those things, creating stories that reflect the sentient nature of the more than human world, creating stories that give meaning not simply to abstract ideas, but to concrete places and to living and dying beings. I wrote about climate change from my Master's of Divinity thesis. In a series of sermons, I reflected on climate change and hope. In one sermon, I reflected on the ways we ritualize mourning, mourning the species we have lost, mourning the places we have lost. Grief is our response to loss. Mourning is what we do with that grief. Nancy Menning, theologian and climate activist, says that environmental losses are different than individual human losses because we are mourning not only what we have lost, but what we have destroyed. She writes, when one feels complicit, whether directly or indirectly, in the loss being mourned, guilt intertwines with sorrow, complicating the grieving process. So she suggests that rituals around mourning environmental loss be linked specifically with those losses, but that they also need to address and transform feelings of guilt and remorse, not in ways that relieve us of our responsibilities, but in ways that might deepen our commitment to ongoing environmental activism that might forestall, mitigate, or even prevent future losses. And along with rituals, she suggests an ongoing spiritual practice that sustains what we have learned through ritual. She says that rituals provide a temporal, spatial, and social framework upon which to begin reorienting that which has been disoriented. Practices sustain the commitment to mourning and may help us become the kind of people who are resilient in the face of impermanence. The book, The Voyage of the Basset, has an unexpected ending. The villainous dragon becomes the hero, saving the life of all the characters, and Medusa ceases to turn her gaze into stone, ceases to turn people into stone. There's a picture going around the internet of Greta Thunberg, the young woman who initiated the climate strike, sitting alone, striking by herself a year ago, alongside pictures of the hundreds and thousands of people all over the world striking on Friday. That is the unexpected. That is the shift, the movement that pushes the story forward. As we celebrate the changing of seasons, the shift of the earth, the wheel of the year, let us imagine the unexpected and how the stories that keep our imaginations open, how those stories help us ask the question, what if? Amen, and blessed be.